This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Last year, more than 5,000 children in Texas were adopted out of the foster care system. Still, the demand for families willing to provide safe and loving homes is greater than ever. In 2016, 739 children were waiting for adoption in Bexar County alone, according to the Texas Department of Family and Protective Services, with thousands more in limbo all over the state. Events are being held across the country in November to highlight the need for more support and education in the adoption process. So how do young people in foster care cope with the wait for adoption? What options are available to potential parents? And what are the requirements to adopt in Texas? If you are thinking about adoption, what are your concerns? What's holding you back? Maybe it's a piece of misinformation that we can puzzle out right now here on the radio. Call in with your questions and comments to 210-614-8980. If you were or you are an adoptive parent, tell us how it worked out for you. What went right or wrong? What do you think we should know about that experience? 210-614-8980. You can also email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet us at @tprsource. We're joined this afternoon by Tim Gable. He's the program administrator for the Texas Department of Family and Protective Services, Region 8. Also with us is Jeremy Spencer, a San Antonio Police Department officer and a parent of two adopted children. And Anais Vieira is the chief public relations officer for the Children's Shelter San Antonio. It's great to have you here.
Great to be with you.
So let's start off with Tim Gable. Tell me about over at the Department of Family and Protective Services, what the view is. What is happening with adoption? Particularly, we're talking about in the area, because there's different types of adoptions, but we're talking about children out of foster care, right?
Correct.
And so where are these children? Where are they coming from? How many do we have?
In Bexar County right now, we have about 1,000 children who have been legally freed by the courts for the purpose of adoption.
When you say legally freed, that means they've had the parental rights of their natural parents have been severed.
Correct.
That's a big thing to do. It's not easy. Judges don't take that thing lightly.
No, and we really try to work with the family towards rehabilitation so they can return home. Because the best place for any child to grow up is with their parents.
Okay, and so these are children that have gone through that.
That have gone through that, who have, you know, I can't discuss specific cases,
yes.
But, you know, if anyone pays attention to the news, you know the kind of children that come into our system. You know, the abuse and neglect and exposure to substances. Just, they've come through some very traumatic situations in their home. They've been removed from their parents, which is another traumatic event. Some of our kids have been bounced around in the system because of their behaviors. People give notice on them. So a lot of our kids have suffered some real trauma in their short lives.
So they need a loving home, stable family that they can nest in.
And that they know that this family is going to be there for them throughout their lives, not just till they're 18 and adults, but, you know, we all want a forever family, a family that, who's going to walk you down the aisle, you know, when you get married? Where, when you're in school, in college, you know, where are you going to go for Christmas holidays and Thanksgiving holidays? You know, so it's much more than just having a parent through graduation from high school and turning 18. It's having a family for your entire life. Mm-hmm.
Anais, you're the Chief Public Relations Officer for the Children's Shelter San Antonio.
Yes,
so many of these children who are waiting for adoption, mm-hmm. are they with you?
Yeah, so the Children's Shelter has an emergency shelter. We do have a residential treatment center, and then we have a treatment foster care program. So just to kind of give you an overview, obviously we're joined here with Jeremy Spencer, who has actually gone through our foster care to adoption program. And so we work right in line with the Texas Department of Family and Protective Services. When children come in and they're being asked to be placed with one of our foster families, we do through a matching program to being able to ensure that that child is matched best with a family. I know that I was looking through social media posts earlier, and a lot of people have questions like, oh, I'm just a single mom, can I adopt? And so with the Children's Shelter, we do the entire licensing process. process for the foster or foster to adoptive family. And so we walk them through the entire process from the FBI background checks to, you know, being able to get all the licenses that's required by the state of Texas. And the Children's Shelter is moving to something called a treatment foster care model that really works with children to address their mental health needs. You know, Tim spoke a little bit earlier about how children who are already, who are removed by Child Protective Services, that already is traumatic enough. And then, you know, looking at their complex trauma and their symptoms of their traumatic experiences can be towards aggressive behavior. And so the Children's Shelter works with families to identify how can they move into a treatment foster care model, which is trust-based relational intervention training for the foster families and trauma-informed care training. So it really is, how do you work with a child or children who have these trauma symptoms and provide them with that level of care in a home setting?
What is the first step that someone should take if they're seriously considering and are wondering, you haven't made the decision yet, say, maybe this is right for us?
Right. It takes a number of months, years even, to even consider becoming a foster or even an adoptive family. And so the Children's Shelter has biweekly what we call foster care orientation meetings. And the next one is actually going to be on Tuesday, November 7th at 6:30 p.m. To 8 o'clock p.m. at the Children's Shelter. And what we do is we give an overview in terms of where the children are coming in from, because a lot of times they may be confused. Is it an international adoption? Is it a private adoption? I heard it takes a lot of money. And so we really, you know, articulate to the prospective families that these are children who are, you know, technically, they're wards of the state of Texas. You know, that Texas is the legal guardian of these children. And so we walk them through the process, what potentially could happen. You know, we know that families really want to say, I want to take in only girls or only boys or boys and girls only. I only want to take care of an infant or toddler or older children. And so they really get to share with us, what they feel comfortable with in terms of fostering and adopting children. And so that's the first step, is to connect with the
Children's Shelter. Going to one of these events, it's very, very informal, not committing to anything.
Absolutely not.
It's just basically just an exchange of information, and you say, okay, this is the reality.
Correct.
And so, and then anyone can just pull out at any time.
They do. And right then and there, some of them like, this is not exactly what I was looking for. This is not what I was anticipating. And so sometimes a lot of individuals may be like, I really want to do something, but I really don't know what. I'll give you an example. We know that the First Lady Cecilia Abbott put out something called the Network of Nurture. And so she's definitely looking to partner up with the faith-based community to do something a little bit more expansive than just foster care adoption.
And she's an adoptive parent too.
Yes, she is. And so, I know that the South Texas Orphan Alliance partnered up with a lot of nonprofit organizations in San Antonio a couple of months ago to do a babysitter certification. So those would be able to be certified. I think they certified a number of individuals who said, I don't want to really be a foster parent. I don't have the time to be an adoptive parent, but I can commit to something very short term, maybe like 2 weeks, a couple of days, a couple of hours. But that's also an alternative.
All right. Okay. We're going to talk more about the adoption process here in Texas for adopting out of the foster care program. Who are these children? What are their needs? And what's it like? We're going to hear from a San Antonio police officer, Jeremy Spencer, when we come back from the break, talk about his experience. He's now the parent of two adopted children. If you got a question or a comment, we want to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980. We want to hear your story. If you're thinking about it, got some questions, we want to hear those questions. 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this 1 minute break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about adoption. A lot of adoption events happening across Texas here in Bexar County this month, as we're trying to educate potential possible parents, adoption parents, about what this experience could be like. We know that there is a big need here in the state. Call in if you got a question or comment, 210-614-8980. Martha has called in. And Martha, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. I'd like to point out, I'm a recent San Antonio resident, a couple of years here. I have an adult a child who was adopted. She continues to need mental health care, but it's very, very hard to find in San Antonio. Either, you know, the agencies don't handle that particular kind of case, or, you know, private psychiatrists won't accept patients who have Medicaid or even certain private insurance, even if they do have private insurance. So I have finally found a wonderful psychiatrist, but it took a year and a half.
All right, Martha, thank you for that question. So Martha's talking about her adult child, so this is the forever family, and she's still dealing with, you know, all these issues, and those are things that an adopted parent will be thinking about. Tim Gable?
Yes, and with some of our special needs children, you're not just committing to raising a child into adulthood. You know, you're committing to be their parent and possibly caregiver for most of your life. So
it's a rewarding experience.
It's a rewarding experience, and you talk with families who are their biological children are born with autism or developmentally disabled or Down syndrome, you know, and they would not give that up, you know, even though they know they're having to be caregivers for their children. And but it's just the reward you get from being a parent.
Another caller, Bonnie. Hi, Bonnie. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Okay, you're on the air.
All righty. I wanted to ask if there was supports, mental health specifically, what supports are available for families who adopt these children, because they are all obviously traumatized and they're going to need ongoing care. Families who take them in are going to need probably support also, and as the previous caller mentioned, really lifelong care. What financial supports are available for parents who are willing to adopt these children?
All right, Bonnie, thank you for that call. And so Anais over at the Children's Shelter San Antonio. Mm-hmm.
Sure, I can answer the mental health perspective. So we know, and going back to Tim's perspective earlier, is that, you know, already children who are removed are going to need long-term, you know, mental health needs, or they're going to need some, you know, stability in terms of addressing their mental health needs. One of the things the Children's Shelter has is about 2 years ago, we established something called the Hope Center. It's a Harvey E. Najm Hope Center. And over the course of 2 years, we have served children from ages 4 to 17 and their caregivers, whether that's biological family, relative caregivers, or even foster adoptive parents. And so these children get 16 weeks of ongoing therapy with a licensed therapist, and then we have a social work component that follows that family up to a year after discharge. And so going to that, we, our president, CEO Nat Rodriguez, really saw a need in the fact that if children are on wait lists for, you know, children who have experienced maltreatment and we're trying to expedite their services and get them back into a home setting, we know that mental health has to be the critical component at the core of that. So we established that 2 years ago. And so, you know, you can find out more information on our website about the Harvey E. Najm Hope Center. And we know that that community is in need. And I'll just kind of expand a little bit on that point. About 25% of the Hope Center population are relative caregivers. You know, what we see at our emergency shelter is that about 40% of the discharge from our emergency shelter are going to relative caregivers. And so that's a growing population of in needs where children who have special needs or who are, you know, they've been abused, abandoned, or neglected by their biological families. They're, you know, Child Protective Services is placing them with their relative caregivers, you know.
A relative caregiver could be a grandparent or an aunt mm-hmm. or an uncle.
That's correct.
And so maybe there was a part of the family where there was some upheaval, and now there's part of the family that is stable and ready mm-hmm. to take their blood can in.
Yes.
But they do have to go through a process.
They do. And we also offer kinship services. We know that CPS has referred some of those relative caregivers to our kinship our, you know, foster care program to go actually become part of the licensed process to become foster to adoptive families.
Okay, we'll talk more about that sure. in just a bit. I want to go over to Jeremy Spencer. He's a San Antonio police officer, and you're the parent of two adopted children. Welcome. It's great to have you here.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So, Jeremy, how did you get into the first contact with the thought of, I'm going to be an adoptive parent? How did that happen?
My wife and I moved here from San Angelo, Texas in 2012, with me continuing my law enforcement career with the San Antonio Police Department. And during my time in the police training academy, one of the things that the cadets do with every class is to go take a tour of the children's shelter, being that they provide emergency placement shelter service in the unfortunate event that police may have to take custody of a child in an emergency. So during the tour, I saw all the services that they provide for the children and for foster parents with licensing and support. And I had never seen anything like it. I went home and told my wife, "You'll never believe what I just learned about today." We didn't have anything like that where we were from. And so I finished up all of my training with the police department. And shortly after that, my wife and I, over coffee and pie late at night at gyms, because that's where you make big life decisions, we decided, you know what, it's time to do it. There's never going to be a perfect time. There's never going to be a better time than right now. And so we just decided to jump in and go to one of the inquiry meetings, and the rest is history from there.
So when you went to the children's shelter and got the tour, you saw kids playing around and just being kids and being adorable, and
that's right, they'll get you, they'll walk those kids right past you, right in front of you. And you know, it's, you just, when the need is so great, and you, when you see it presented in front of you like that, it's, you can't ignore it. It's something that if you've ever been moved about it before, if it's been on your heart, then it's hard to deny it. And without turning this into a church service, the good book, as we believe, tells us that what true religion is supposed to be is to take care of widows and orphans in their time of need. And so that for us was just an undeniable call.
Did you adopt one child first and then a second, or how did that work?
The first case started in 2014 for us, and it took a little over a year for the case to be completed, and every case is different, and so our second case did not take that long. But yeah, two separate cases. Our two girls are not related by blood, but they are sisters through and through now. So with the adoption, that happened.
And their ages?
They are 3 and 1.
And which one did you adopt first?
The 3-year-old. We got hers out of the hospital. She was drug exposed. And so she spent her 2 months of her NICU. And she came to us directly from there. Same with our second one. Her time in the NICU was shorter, but she was also drug exposed.
And how are things been? Any regrets?
Zero regrets. There have been challenges along the way, certainly. It's not easy to give up some of your privacy. There are people coming to your home, caseworkers and health inspectors and attorneys that represent the children's best interest. They all come to your home, and rightfully so. They're making sure that these children are well cared for, and but it's also, it's not easy. I consider us to be fairly private people. And so to just have somebody coming through to check up on you every couple weeks, every week, it's a serious challenge.
Any concerns about when the children grow up and they realize, hey, was I adopted, Dad? How are you going to talk about that?
So for us, we feel like definitely to be open and honest with them, and to give them what they can understand as they can understand it, is big in helping them adjust. It's not dropping a bomb on them at some arbitrary age when you feel like, oh, well, they're, you know, 15 years old or whatever. Now they can understand it. So now I'm going to drop this on you and you're going to have to cope with this whole thing. So we give them what they can understand. We tell them things like, we're so happy that you've come to us. You know, you're so special to us. When you came to us, that was the best day ever. That kind of thing, as they're little toddlers, and we'll keep helping them to grow with that knowledge so that they can adjust to it over time. And you know, you don't know that your upbringing is different when you're in your upbringing. You just know what you know. And so if they can adjust to that throughout their childhood, then we feel like they'll be more well-adjusted for down the road.
Do they have special medical needs that they you have to look out for?
Our oldest one did suffer from some symptoms of drug withdrawals. She was on some medications, but it's amazing just what the constant support from a family will do, even on that level. She made a complete turnaround from her time in the hospital, and it's just from having a mother and father figure to love on her constantly. And so she was quickly weaned off of the drugs, and both of our girls have not had any need for extra services, though I can say that we've been surprised with the level of services that are available to us, with developmental specialists and early childhood intervention, all these different programs that are out there. If you need it, it's available to you. And so we have not felt like we're on our own with it. We don't feel like, oh, we got to go figure out our own answers. There's plenty of people. We always know that we can call somebody at the children's shelter or with the insurance or whoever we need to call. If there's an issue, we can get it sorted out.
Did that surprise you that those support services were so easily ready and that you were able to tap into that if you need them? Did you know that was going to be the case?
I did not know. They tell you that in the inquiry meetings, they tell you that there's support out there for you and you just never really know. But yeah, I was definitely surprised.
What other surprises are out there? Did you know how this is going to grab your heart?
It's difficult to navigate through some of the challenges involving biological relatives. We've had both sides of the gambit. We've had biological parents that we were not in any way comfortable with interacting with. We've had other biological family members that we have a relationship with. They're really great, really great people, and they just want to be involved in our daughter's life. And, you know, that's more support for her down the road, and so there's no way we would say no to it. And you know, in the end, you find out that whether it's through that or whether it's during the licensing process, you meet lots of different people, especially in the licensing process. You go through with people of all walks of life, and you find out that there's bigger things that draw us together than the differences that we think are supposed to separate us. And that's really special. A surprise for us was to go through all of our training classes with different people that we might not just be friends with because of our circumstance, but you find out that you should totally be friends with these people because they actually share bigger interests.
And so you're a San Antonio police officer. You're working a beat downtown?
Yes, sir.
What's it like to come home into the shift to a family house with kids?
It's indescribable. You know, fostering has improved every aspect of my life. Not only did it make me a father, it has made me a better father over the years. It's made me a better husband. It's made me a better police officer. I feel like I have more perspective, which affects everything that I do with life. And it's even affected my hobbies. I got a good barefoot lawn now, those dad hobbies. And so to come home and feel that support from the children, my wife and kids, it's, you know, that's, for me, that's what makes a man.
All right. So we're going to continue our conversation. That's Jeremy Spencer, San Antonio police officer. He's the parent of two adopted children. We're talking about adoption, the need for it here in Bexar County in Texas. What questions do you have? What stories can you tell us about your experiences? We want to hear them. The number is 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about adoption of children in the Texas foster care program. A lot of events happening across the month informing people about the possibility. Have you ever thought about becoming an adoptive parent? Lots of help out there, a lot of information available so you can make an informed decision. Let's talk to one of our callers. The number is 210-614-8980, and Diane is on the line. Diane, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. Hi. I come from a family of 10 adopted children. Most of us are adopted out of the country, but there are a couple that are adopted within the country, and the process and the cost has always been different. So my question is, what cost is involved, adopting within Texas, and will the state of Texas help pay for any of it?
Okay, Diane, thank you for that great call. Appreciate that. So let's talk to Tim Gable, Program Administrator for the Texas Department of Family and Protective Services, Region 8. What does it cost to become an adoptive parent out of foster care? What help is there from the state?
To become an adoptive parent, the costs are minimal. You might have to pay for a fire inspection or a health inspection. You might have to spend some money getting some of your records if you don't have a copy of your birth certificate or a divorce decree, but the cost is minimal. The adoption is handled by the department, and all those costs are pretty much handled by us. When a family does adopt from us, the majority get adoption subsidy until the child's an adult, a monthly subsidy to help provide for their care. They get health insurance until they're an adult to cover for all their medical and mental health issues. We also have post-adopt services once an adoption is consummated, and they need services that go above and beyond what they can get through the Medicaid services. We have a contractor who provides assistance there. So there's a lot of support, financial support, that comes to the family, but the cost to the family is
minimal. It's not a huge expense.
No.
So the caller mentioned international adoptions. That's not what we're talking about. But you got to wonder, I don't know if you guys can answer this or not, but why do people go to overseas to make an adoption when we have the needs here locally? And so Anais, over at the Children's Shelter San Antonio, any ideas?
You know, I think that I remember giving a tour a couple of years ago, and an individual was like, I've been looking to foster to adopt, and I've heard this like hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I'm like, oh, wow, are you talking about private adoption? And I think that they definitely get both of them mixed up. But, you know, these are children who are, you know, within the state of Texas custody. So, no, I mean, we haven't. I mean,
the impression is that the rules and regulations and the oversight is so tough and hard to navigate if you were to adopt locally.
Right.
So I'm going to adopt a child from somewhere else, and you know, which is a good thing to do. I imagine, but still, that we have need here.
We do, and obviously, you know, having 1,000 children waiting for an adoptive home in Bexar County, just in the city of San Antonio, I mean, it speaks loud and clear that the need is there, and the critical need is there. And you know, we haven't even touched on just the number of even foster homes. So when you look at that, you know, it's really looking back at our community. These are our community kids. I think a lot of times when we talk about foster care and adoption, it's like, oh, well, it's the state of Texas. Well, I always say, well, yes, they're little Texans. But, you know, we really need, they're our community kids. They come right from the city of San Antonio. And so they're here, and they need loving, stable homes to be able to take care of them.
Another caller. This is Matt. Hi, Matt. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you.
All right, go ahead.
I had a question about, you know, kind of what it looks like in Texas and, you know, specifically San Antonio for same-sex couples who would be interested in fostering or adopting.
Okay, Matt, thank you for the call. And so do you want to answer that, Tim Gable?
Yeah, we've placed children with same-sex couples for years.
Many years.
Many years, going back, at least that I'm aware of, in when I came to San Antonio in 94, we were doing it. So that has never been an issue with the department.
Now, in the last legislative session, they passed a law that allows adoption agencies to choose not to grant adoptions to same-sex couples. But does that impact what's happening at the Texas Department of Family and Protective Services?
Not really, because one, we have our own adoptive families, which we...
So that's mainly for faith-based organizations.
Faith-based organizations.
And that's not you.
That's not us. It's not the children's shelter. And there are some faith-based organizations that also accept same-sex couples as adoptive parents.
There are people who recognize that same-sex couples are excellent parents and provide the stability and nurturing and the love that any child would benefit from.
Absolutely.
That's right. And there are enough adoption agencies, private agencies out there between us and them. There's plenty of opportunities for same-sex couples to become either foster parents or foster and adoptive parents.
And they're a tremendous resource in this area. They could be just a wonderful family and totally giving.
Yes.
All right, another caller. This is Joseph. Hey, Joseph, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, hello, sir. I just want to let you know about my experience. I have a sister that's adopted, and my parents adopted her when I was 2 and a half, and she was 9 months old. And I just want to know that, to let your listeners know that it's the greatest thing in the world to have an adopted sibling. It fulfills my life, like, unbelievably. I just want to throw that out there into the air for you guys.
Well, Joseph, I appreciate you saying that. Thank you for calling in with that. So let me go over to, Jeremy Spencer, San Antonio police officer. We heard his story earlier, parent of two adopted children. You're creating a family. You brought these two girls together, and now they're going to be sisters and bonded for life. And how do you feel about that? What do people, and there's other officers on the force who have gone through the same experience that you have.
Absolutely. Yeah, all walks of life. Whatever field you may work in or whatever community you may belong to, you can find people, if you start asking around, who have experience with fostering and adopting from foster care. And I mean, yeah, you can't measure the value of these two girls of ours becoming sisters. You know, they'll always have that. They'll always have that bond of both having come from foster care. For them to grow up together, having shared that experience, I can think of nothing better.
But the thing that there are other officers that have basically walked in those same shoes, they went through that tour, they fell in love with kids and say, how do we help? This just speaks to the dedication to service to the community that you and other officers really are exhibiting and incarnate. That's just tremendous. I want to thank you for that. Another caller, this is Elizabeth. Hi, Elizabeth, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, David. Thank you again for an excellent program and topic. And I first of all want to thank Tim and Jeremy for the work that they do. It's not work. It's an action of love for these children so in need. So thanks to you all. I want to say that I ministered to two people on death row, one a man, one a woman. Both were executed, and I witnessed their execution. Both were victims of child abuse as children and violence in particular. And I'm thinking that society needs to really own this reality, because what these persons and what all loving homes do when they take and abuse children and give them a healing experience in a family of love is actually take an action that is an intervention at the earliest and most important stage of a child's life. And, of course, only God knows the future, but who knows how much violence in the world has been prevented by the fact that there has been this loving intervention in the lives of children who have suffered violence. And I would just want to thank them for that and say that it is everyone's problem. It's not just a problem for the home and the child protective services and the adopting family.
All right, Sister Elizabeth, thank you for the call. I sure do appreciate that. Do you want to react to that, to Tim Gable?
I certainly agree with her.
Do you see how children who otherwise were not on a good trajectory, suddenly they're being placed into a loving, stable home, great people around them, great role models. Now their lives, their futures suddenly changed.
Yeah, and it having that relationship with a parent that you can truly trust and loves you unconditionally has a lot to do with it. One of the worst things that happens in our system is when we have children age out. They don't have a family to go to. They are not adopted. they end up on the streets usually, and very poor outcomes for kids who graduate from foster care without an adoptive family or not being returned to biological family. So it's so important that we have people who are willing to consider adopting older children, because even if we can get a child at 17, if they can get that permanent family and someone who's saying, I'm going to love you unconditionally and you will always have a place to stay, yeah, you're going to spread your wings and you're going to go about your life.
Make mistakes,
but we're going to be there for you. You get arrested, we're going to come bond you out. You know, you have a crisis, we're going to be there. You know, having that allows an individual to develop to their potential. But if you've got no one, if you're in the world alone, no one giving you moral direction, no one doing anything for you, it's too easy to slip into some very negative behaviors.
All right, we're gonna come back from a break after a minute. Our phone line is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We're talking about adoption, and we have a lot of programs coming up this month to inform the public about the possibility of adoption. But if you got questions or comments now, we'd love to hear from you. 210-614-8980, The Source continues. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about adoption. And if you're thought about adopting, you know what's holding you back. Why not adopt? Give us a call with your questions and comments, 210-614-8980. Joe is on the line. Hi, Joe. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks. I just want to say I'm really glad y'all are having this program, and that there's more awareness being promoted. Unfortunately, you just always seem to hear on the news about how some adoptive family did something horrible to some child. So I just want to say, as you know, my wife and I are former foster parents. We ended up finally adopting two beautiful little girls. There's a lot of awesome families doing a lot of work. And, of course, CPS, Children's Shelter, we've worked with them. So just a lot of good people. Just another thing, a resource that we came across that helped us, a book, and I don't remember the author, but the title was, I think, Three Little Words by a young lady that was in the system herself. Was a great resource. It really gave perspective, because unfortunately some of these kiddos, their normal is not your normal, and so you learn a lot. And so, you know, I would just recommend that to anybody that's you know, like a foster parent or something.
Well, tell me more about that book, Joe. What does that mean, Three Little Words?
Yeah, that's the title of the book, Three Little Words. And basically, I guess, what the words meant for the young lady growing up. And fortunately, she went through, you know, a number of bad experiences. And the experiences with foster parents that they, you know, they had a hard time relating. You know, she only knew a certain way of doing things. And so she was with other foster kids, with foster parents. She got bounced around because of behaviors that they thought were bad, but she didn't know any better. And so, again, it just, you know, it just really gives you perspective when you read that. You know,
okay.
You have your way of thinking of how kids, family should grow up, but unfortunately, they don't all do it like that.
All right, well, Joe, thank you for the call. I appreciate that. And here's another caller. This is Adriana. Adriana, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi there. So my comment, I suppose, is it kind of goes along the lines of the other caller. And, you know, that does sort of come to mind. I mean, I hate for it to sound horrible, but, you know, when I hear, like, to subsidize, you know, I just feel like it may be a motivation to adopt for the wrong reasons. And you do hear about so much child abuse in the system, and, you know, is not there to protect them. And it was just kind of like a comment and a concern.
Okay, let's explore that, Adriana. Thank you for bringing that up. So is it possible for people to adopt a child, seeing all that sweet adoption assistant money coming in through the, you know, through the mailbox? And, I mean, is that enough to create some sort of a form of bad motivations behind doing that? So, Tim Gable?
I don't think most people would say, wow, $400? This will cover all my costs for caring for the child.
And
for
profit.
Those of, yeah, they're, there's no profit. It's kind of reimbursement for the cost. But for any of us who've raised our own children, we know they cost a lot more than $400 a month.
Okay, so you could just categorically say that there is no one running the scam adopting children in order to get a lot of this adoption assistance that's available in Texas and racking up that money. Does it make sense to you?
I don't think so. No, they're probably, in the past, there were people who would, you'd hear about adopting 20 or 30 children. Okay. We don't do that anymore.
So, but follow-up inspections. And so, Jeremy Spencer, you're an adoptive parent of two children, San Antonio police officer. Do you still have contact with the adoption agencies, making sure that suddenly you've become a different person or something?
There's no like specific follow-up measures. Once the adoption is done, they're legally yours, but you're still obligated to the same standards that every other parent in Texas is held to, and that you're required to feed and care for and shelter your children, make sure they're educated, and all of these things that everybody is supposed to stand for. And we do have contact with the children's shelter still, because we're still licensed, even though we're not currently, we don't have a placement currently of any foster children, but we still have contact. We keep in touch with people that we've, different caseworkers that we've met along the way, different attorneys that have represented the children. They're all interested. They've followed these children for, over a year in that neighborhood. And so they're all interested. We get Christmas cards and they want to see pictures and all that kind of thing. So, there's not a formal follow-up per se, but, you bond with some of these people in a way that is unique to the foster care.
Now, Anais, mm-hmm. Biera, so is there like a 6 month trial period before the final adoption becomes finalized?
So when, obviously families who go through the entire licensing process, they are working obviously with the Child Protective Services, the judicial system, the attorney ad litems, and they're going through the entire process with the child. They'll go to hearings, they'll go and be able to make sure that everything, sometimes there may be a few things that need to be taken care of legally. And then I know the department is there because they are the legal guardian of the child until the parental rights are formally terminated. And then once those occur, once the child is placed and then once that adoption is consummated, going to Mr. Spencer's perspective is they're your children, and I will have to say that there have been times where, families may have adopted children and maybe the child's behavior became too much for them. There have been situations where, unfortunately, sometimes some families just say, I can't do this anymore. But that's why it's so imperative for families to be able to have a network of support, especially with the mental health services. And that is really critical. And I know the department works very closely with mental health providers. We provide that mental health service for our children and families. And it's family therapy as well. It's not just the child. So that is very imperative too.
All right, another caller. This is Debbie. And hi, Debbie. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. I'm curious. I have a cousin in another state interested in adopting. Do you have to be a Texas resident to participate in this program?
All right, Debbie, thank you for the call. Tim Gable?
No. For people who live in other states, similar processes, either through the state agency or through a private agency, you become an adoptive parent. And you can access our website, the Texas Adoption Resource Exchange. And if you see a Texas child that you think might be a good match, you can contact the agency and let them know that you're interested in that child. Really about the only, there's some extra studies that have to be done and an interstate compact, and the agency you're with out of the other state has to be willing to contract with us to do that. But we adopt children out of state, not on a regular basis, but often. It's not an unusual occurrence.
Now, on the website, you can see the photographs of many children that are waiting to be adopted.
That's correct.
These are like some of these photographs look like a photographer may have donated their time to take these photographs of these children to give them a really good looking photograph.
Yes.
So you can see that these kids vary in ages, but there's quite a few that are older than 10 and they're looking for homes.
Yes. And another big group that we're really, because we know the relationships of siblings are so important and those are our lifetime. You know, those are going to be your longest relationships or siblings. So we do everything we can to adopt sibling groups.
I saw three brothers who wanted to be adopted together.
Yes, our four, our five, our six.
Wow.
And those are very special families that are willing to take on that many children at one time.
And so, again, if someone is thinking about it, you know, what is the process? How do we help people start sort of, you know, getting more accustomed to the idea, this might be for me. Let me think about it some more. Let me think, like, where should they explore this and I used to get better information?
Sure. So one of the first things I encourage listeners to do is either go visit our website, childrenshelter.org, and look at our foster care and adoption page. It really kind of articulates very well in terms of the next times that we're going to be having our foster care orientations. It also shares with you in terms of the mental health trainings we provide for families. Tim brought up the TARE page, T-A-R-E. I will share with you that obviously with the children that are in foster care who are looking for adoption, obviously are the large sibling groups. And a lot of families have, it's really hard for them to say, I want to take care of six children at one time. You know, I don't have the capacity to do that.
You don't have to do that?
Yeah, no. You can do one. So sometimes it becomes a little overwhelming, like I want to save everybody. But really, you know, one child at a time or two. But in addition to that, when you look at the department's website, it becomes a little heartbreaking because there are some very medically fragile children who are there. And it shows the reality of what we in the state of Texas face. When you look at children who are in the foster care system, I always go back to their kids, and they should be kids. They should have an opportunity to be children. And so we know that, you know, at the Children's Shelter, we put kids first, we put children first, and we encourage our families to explore the opportunity to connect with us. You know, give us a call, give us an email, you know, go visit our website. But also, you know, make an opportunity when you go to our orientations that we'll try to put you in contact with a foster or adoptive family to be able to speak with them, because not just coming from us, but we want to be able to share that real world experience.
Right. And you want people to make informed decisions.
Absolutely.
That they're going to be able to live with for the rest of their lives. And Ais Biera is the Chief Public Relations Officer for the Children's Shelter San Antonio. We talked to Tim Gable. He's with the Texas Department of Family and Protective Services. Also with us, we heard an amazing story from Jeremy Spencer, San Antonio police officer, parent of two adopted children. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.